start today's class with Jesus being among the Gentiles. We have the example of him meeting a Canaanite woman. It's found in Matthew and it's found in Mark. We find that next portion, Jesus is traveling to the region of Tyre and Sidon. It's in Phoenicia. This is the second time, actually, that Jesus left the area or the borders of Israel. First time, of course, being when he was taken to Egypt as an infant. So this is the second time he's left those borders of Israel. So he's always been in that one area. It's the only time in the gospel accounts that indicate that Jesus left Israel during his ministry. The book of Mark tells us he went there to avoid being known. But it wasn't possible. His reputation had grown so big. There, a Canaanite woman who lived in that region approaches Jesus. Again, this is the area outside of Israel. She approaches Jesus and she's begging him to free her daughter who's suffering from having a demon. Mark's account refers to her as a Greek, but this term was used loosely by the Jews to refer to any non-Israelite as a Greek. She refers to Jesus as the Son of David, so she demonstrates her understanding of who Jesus was as being the Messiah. Strangely, Jesus ignores her. His disciples, though, come to him and ask him to send her away because she keeps on pleading. She's annoying them. The prejudice of the disciples is shown here because while they have been granted the authority to cast out demons, it doesn't appear that they were interested in helping this woman this time. Adding to the insult already given, Jesus eventually tells the woman that he was only sent to the lost in Israel. In other words, he is saying that she is of the wrong nationality to receive aid from him. But this did not deter her efforts. We see that she falls down and she worships him. And so indicates her understanding that he was divine. He was God. He had acknowledged her presence, and so she keeps on pressing her plea. And again, Jesus appears to insult the woman. Instead of acknowledging her faith at this time, he said the miracles that he had the right to grant were for God's children and not for little dogs. And so insults both her and her people. Dogs were not respectful animals in that society. And still she perseveres in her plea. She acknowledges what Jesus said was true and responded that even dogs get crumbs from Master's table. At this point, Jesus shows us that he was testing her faith. He praises her for her great faith and states that her daughter would be made well. No, Jesus did not go to the daughter. It's noted that she was made well at that very hour. The woman's faith was demonstrated again in that she left at Jesus' word. She trusted him. And when she arrived home, she found that her daughter was indeed well. This event illustrates a recurrent theme in the Bible. God wants his people to show persistence, even in the face of adversity. We know the story of Jacob wrestling with the angel was an early example of this persistence. Jesus will later tell the parable of the unjust judge to the same point in Luke 18 when we get there. So the Canaanite woman's persistent faith stands as a contrast to Peter's weak faith when he was trying to walk on the water. Matthew chapter 15. Begin at verse 21. Matthew 15 and 21. Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Behold, a woman of Canaan came from the region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, "Send her away, for she cries out after us." But he answered and said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And she came and worshipped him, saying, "Lord, help me." But he answered and said, "It is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." She said, "Yes, Lord, even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, great is your faith. Let it be to you as you desire." And her daughter was healed that very hour. Mark chapter 7. Verse 24, Mark 7, 24. From there he arose and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and he entered a house and wanted no one to know it. But he could not be hidden. For a woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about it. She came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by birth. She kept asking him to cast the demon out of her daughter. But Jesus said to her, "Let the children be filled first, for it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs." And she answered and said to him, "Yes, Lord, yet even the little dogs under the table eat from the children's crumbs." And he said to her, "For this saying, go your way, the demon has gone out of your daughter." And when she had come to her house, she found the demon gone out, and her daughter was lying on the bed. Any comments about that section? Next we see in this timeline is the healing of a man deaf, and he also has a speech impediment. This is found also in Matthew and Mark. We see next that Jesus returns to the area around the Sea of Galilee. He stops at the far side of the Sea of Decapolis, and we've heard this name before, Decapolis. He appears to be continuing to King Herod, or at least the territory he rules, that direction. Decapolis, again, is the area where Jesus had cast out the legion of demons from man. Remember, Jesus was asked to leave when he was there last time. So he cast out the legion and was asked to leave. He gets a different reception this time, though. He climbed a particular mountain, though we don't know which one it was. It wasn't named. And soon a great multitude comes to him, bringing their ill and their injured. And they marvel as they watch Jesus heal each of them. And they gave God glory to God. Again, his reception is drastically different from the last time he was in the area. It possibly could be the result of the preaching in that area of the man who was once demon-possessed. Let's turn to Mark chapter 5 real quick and reread that. Again, he's not been back to this area since then. Verse 18 we'll start. Actually, let's back up so we're going to get it. Verse 16 we'll start. "And those who saw it told them how it happened to him who had been demon-possessed and about the swine. And they began to plead with him to depart from the region." Okay, he was told to leave, asked to leave. "When he got to the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, 'Go home to your friends and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you.'" Verse 20. He departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. So possibly by his relaying this to people is why Jesus had a better reception a second time. Mark records one particular healing of a man who was deaf and an impediment to speaking. Since he appeared to have some limited ability to speak, we assume that he probably lost his hearing later in life. We see it often even nowadays. The method that Jesus used is different than other healings we have seen. We're going to see that rather than do it there, he actually takes the man apart from the crowd. We're going to see him put his fingers in his ears. He's going to spit. He's going to touch his tongue. The reason may be as simple as that since the man was unable to hear, Jesus was demonstrating by touching the various parts that were not working what he was going to be doing so the man would understand. We don't know, though. But looking up to heaven, Jesus said, "Be opened." It's happened in all other miracles. Again, this effect is immediate. It's complete. I had someone comment the other day about someone who was healed, and they said it was a miracle. Well, it took them 2 months for that miracle to work. That was not a miracle. Not that God wouldn't be involved in some way, but it's different. Jesus' miracles are immediate. They're complete. Though Jesus healed many, he continued to insist that word of what he did not be spread, as he often did. But the more, again, as he insists, the more widely the people tell others. His desire, again, is to avoid publicity, which makes his job harder, what he's here for. He knows he's here for a shorter period of time. But because he doesn't want the publicity, as men often do, it makes him to appear even more marvelous in the people's eyes, because he wants no credit for these things. Matthew chapter 15. Verse 29. We're going to see a difference in Matthew and Mark's versions. Verse 29. "Jesus departed from there, and he skirted the Sea of Galilee. He went up on the mountain," I guess not named, just the mountain, "and sat down there. And great multitudes came to him, having with them the lame, blind, mute, maimed, and many others. And they laid them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them. And so the multitude marveled when they saw the mute speaking, the maimed made whole, the lame walking, the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel." Turn over to Mark's account, chapter 7. Mark gives more detail about this man. We'll begin at verse 31. Again, departing from the region of Tyre and Sidon, that's where he was just at, with the Canaanite woman, he came through the midst of the region of Decapolis to the Sea of Galilee. Again, Decapolis, the area where he had been asked to leave early. And they brought to him one who was deaf and had an impediment in speech, and they begged him to put his hand on him. He took him aside from the multitude. He put his fingers in his ears. He spat and touched his tongue. Looking up to heaven, he sighed and said to him, "Ephatha," that is, "be opened." Immediately, his ears were opened, and the impediment of his tongue was loosed, and he spoke plainly. He commanded them that they should not tell anyone. But the more he commanded them, the more widely they proclaimed it. And they were astonished beyond measure, saying, "He has done all things well. He makes both the deaf to hear and the mute to speak." Comments about that section? We had the feeding of the 5,000 before, now we have the feeding of the 4,000 happens next. This is found also in Matthew and Mark. Once again, Jesus feels compassion for the large crowd that had gathered during all this that's happening in the remote area to see him. Again, key, it's a remote area. And they'd been there with him for 3 days now, and they had nothing to eat. And he didn't want to send them away hungry. The circumstances here are very similar to the feeding of over 5,000 just outside of Bethsaida, which we've already covered. It is a wonder that the disciples make similar protests. They've witnessed the feeding of 5,000. And here's something very similar happening. And the disciples make similar protests about being unable. Can't feed this crowd. Where before they feared that they did not have the funds to buy enough to feed the crowd, here they protest that the area they're at is so remote, there's nowhere to purchase food in enough quantity. Makes you wonder how they can doubt so much. Jesus asked how much food, again, was available. Disciples come up with 7 loaves of bread this time and a few small fish. And Jesus has everyone sit down. He blesses the bread and the fish, and they divide it among the disciples. And the disciples, in turn, divide it among the people. And just like before, everyone ate until they were full. Scraps are gathered, and they found that they had 7 baskets of food this time remaining after feeding over 4,000 people. And Jesus then sent the people away. He took a boat to Magdala, which is in the region of Dalmanutha. What's interesting is that the people of Decapolis, unlike the other time, they don't begin to chase Jesus in hopes of wanting additional food. It's a little different. Matthew chapter 15. We get verse 32. Now when Jesus had called his disciples to himself, and he said, "I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way." His disciples said to him, "Where could we get enough bread in the wilderness to fill such a great multitude?" Jesus said to them, "How many loaves do you have?" And they said, 7 and a few little fish. And so he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground. He took the 7 loaves and the fish and gave thanks, broke them, gave them to his disciples, and the disciples gave to the multitude. And so they all ate and were filled. And they took up 7 large baskets full of the fragments that were left. Now those who ate were 4,000 men besides the women and children. And he sent away the multitude, got into the boat, and came to the region of Magdala. Mark chapter 8. Again, he had just done this with 5,000. Makes just wondering why these people don't remember this. And that comes up later as well. Verse 1. Mark 8, verse 1. In those days, multitude being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, "I have compassion on the multitude because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their own houses, they will faint on the way, for some of them have come from afar." His disciples answered him, "How can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness?" And he asked them, "How many loaves do you have?" And they said, 7. And so he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves and gave thanks, broke them, gave them to his disciples to set before them. They set them before the multitude. They also had a few small fish. Having blessed them, he set them also before them. And so they ate and were filled, and they took up 7 large baskets of leftover fragments. Now those who had eaten were about 4,000, and he sent them away. Again, that didn't seem to. It's not recorded here that they followed him anyway. Comments about that section? Next, we're going to see the hostility of the Pharisees and Sadducees. We see them come back into play here. And what do they always want? They want a sign. They want to see something great. Something they've not seen before. Even though they've seen a lot. This is also in Matthew and Mark. We see that after leaving Decapolis, this place, Jesus travels across the Sea of Galilee to Magdala. It's the region of Dalmanutha. These Pharisees and Sadducees confront him. They ask for a sign from heaven as a test. A different wording. They ask for a sign from heaven as a test. Paul noted this trait of the Jews. Let's turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. This trait that they have. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, we'll begin at verse 21. 1 Corinthians 1 and 21. For since in the wisdom of God, the world through wisdom did not know God, it pleased God through the foolishness of the message preached to save those who believe. For Jews request a sign, and Greeks seek after wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews a stumbling block, to the Greeks foolishness. But to those who are called both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Because the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. So they, even here, Paul recounts that they ask for a sign. The fact that signs had been done already is never enough for this group of people. Because they do not want to believe the message. That's the whole point. They can see as many signs as they want, they're not going to believe it. They don't want to believe the message. And so what they do, as often as done today, they look for some way to discount the messenger. Again, they weren't looking for any old sign. They wanted a sign from heaven. What's that mean? That's a sign like those found in the Old Testament where the sun stood still. Or moved back 10 degrees. Or lightning striking from the sky. They want something big. They want a showy sign that would readily be attributed to God, which they believe that Jesus could not produce. Jesus sighs and he points out that they were able to tell the weather. They can look at the sky for the day by observing the signs that the weather produces in the sky, and they can do these things in advance to tell what kind of weather was coming. And while they were willing to pay attention to those small details, they still refused to see the signs that had been given already, that he'd done already, the healings and so forth. It's useless to give additional signs to people who refuse to see signs. They don't want to see the signs. So it's useless to give them additional. They would not get the sign they were demanding because, again, they were a sinful and adulterous people. The only sign that they would see is one similar to what happened to Jonah. And by this, Jesus is alluding to Jonah, who had spent 3 days in the deep before being restored to land. He's hinting that the one sign they would recognize is his resurrection. So returning to the boat, Jesus and the disciples returned to the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, and this is probably near Bethsaida. Matthew chapter 16. This is found in Matthew and Mark. Matthew 16 and verse 1. The Pharisees, the Sadducees came and testing him, asked that he would show them a sign from heaven. He answered and said to them, "When it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. In the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites, you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah." And he left them and he departed. Mark chapter 8. Again, this is the last year of his life. Very story. Verse 10 beginning. Mark 8, verse 10. Immediately got into the boat with his disciples and came to the region of Dalmanutha. The Pharisees came out and began to dispute with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven, testing him. But he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, "Why does this generation seek a sign? Assuredly I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation." And he left them, and getting into the boat again, verse 13, he departed to the other side. Comments about that section? Next one, Jesus gives warnings to disciples about being aware or be wearing of the leaven of the Pharisees. It's found in Matthew and Mark as well. Somewhere in this journey, the disciples realized something. They had forgotten to bring food with them, which was unfortunate since they had just left 7 baskets of food back in Decapolis that no one thought to bring any. All they could find was 1 loaf of bread. Jesus used this discussion as an opportunity to teach them, where he says, "Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." Matthew's account words it differently. It says Sadducees instead of Herod. But this is the same group of people. The party of the Sadducees tended to make up the ruling class in the Galilee area, and so these people would be following Herod. So there's no difference there. But puzzling over Jesus' words to them, the disciples decided that he was referring to the fact that they had no food. But Jesus scolds them for that conclusion. And that conclusion showed how little they understood and how little their faith is this time in Jesus. When there were over 5,000 people to feed, Jesus was able to produce enough food to feed everyone, and they still had 12 baskets left over. When there was 4,000 people to feed, Jesus again was able to produce enough food to feed everyone and still had 7 baskets of leftovers. Why would Jesus be concerned about lack of food? Why would they think this, given with the things they'd seen Jesus can do? They now kind of realize that Jesus can produce food for us. How sad, how quickly they forgot the miracles that they had seen. So once the wrong line of reasoning was exposed, the disciples finally realized that Jesus was warning them to beware of the teachings or the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So they reasoned within themselves. Jesus' use of a metaphor better illustrated why the teachings of the Pharisees and Sadducees were dangerous. Like leaven in a lump of dough, it grows and it spreads. Matthew chapter 16. We'll begin at verse 5. Now when the disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. And Jesus said to them, "Take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "It's because we have taken no bread." But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "O you of little faith, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not yet understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up? Nor the 7 loaves of the 4,000 and how many large baskets you took up? How is it you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees?" Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of the bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Mark chapter 8. Again, verse 14. We'll start at 13. Again, we've already read this, but he left them and getting into the boat again, departed to the other side. Disciples had forgotten to take bread. And they did not have more than 1 loaf with them in the boat. And he charged them, saying, "Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "It's because we have no bread." But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "Why do you reason because you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive nor understand? Is your heart still hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments did you take up?" And they said, 12. "Also, when I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of fragments did you take up?" And they said, 7. And so he said to them, "How is it that you do not understand?" Comments about that section? Probably lastly for today, we have the healing of a blind man in Bethsaida. This is found in Mark only. Jesus' disciples now enter Bethsaida in this next section. And there's a blind man who's brought to him. The man begs for Jesus to touch him. Again, this blind man's not seen anything, but he's obviously heard stuff. It implies that he had heard of Jesus' earlier miracles where people had were healed at his touch. Remember, we've seen that Jesus healed in various different ways, but maybe he had heard about healing by his touch. Evidently, the man was not born blind because later he describes seeing men who look like trees. Well, how would he know what trees are if he never saw a tree? So maybe he was not born blind, but became blind. The events in this healing have led many to question, or led to many questions, I should say, because they do not follow the way other healings are recorded. This one's a little different, too. We've already seen before where Jesus touched various parts of the body and spit. But we see that Jesus leads the man out of Bethsaida, much like he did earlier. He spit upon his eyes, laid his hands on him, and then asked if he saw anything. The man states that he sees men who look like trees walking about. In other words, he can't see clearly, but he's seeing something. That is, the men and the trees looked alike to the man, but he could tell which were men because they were moving. Jesus then puts his hands on the man's eyes a second time. Depending on your translation that you have, Jesus either took or either had the man look up, that is to look again, or Jesus looked at the man intently. The variance is due to variations in the Greek copies. Two different words, though somewhat similar in spelling, are used in different copies. The resultant variation deals with who did the looking. But again, that's not important at this point. After the second time, the man's eyesight was completely restored, and he finally could see clearly. The difference in methods Jesus used to heal tells us the healings did not come about by the method. That's not what's important. But it's by the power of the Lord. That's what's important. Who's doing this healing? Other people imitating these same methods, that try to imitate some of Jesus' methods, should not expect to have the same results. Turn over to Acts chapter 19. Again, there are those who try to mimic Jesus' healings, but they didn't have the same results. That's why it's important not how you do stuff, but who's doing it. Acts chapter 19. Begin at verse 13. Then some of the itinerant Jews, exorcists, took it upon themselves to call the name of the Lord Jesus over those who had evil spirits, saying, "We exorcise you by Jesus, whom Paul preaches." And also there were seven sons of Sceva, a Jewish chief priest, who did so. And the evil spirit answered and said, "Jesus I know, Paul I know, but who are you?" And the man in whom the evil spirit was leaped on them, overpowered them, prevailed against them, so they fled out of the house naked and wounded. And this became known both to all the Jews and Greeks who dwelt in Ephesus. So again, it doesn't matter how you do it, it's who's doing it. Others note in this section that Jesus' method in this case would require some faith on the blind man's part. Sometimes Jesus' healings didn't require faith. This one apparently did have some kind of faith needed. The man had first accepted being led out of town. He couldn't see. And here's this person leading him out of town. He also had to go through something else, having someone spit in his face. He was first given only partial sight, and he had to trust that Jesus' touch again would give him full sight. So he has patience here, with which this man endured, hints at his faith in Jesus. Jesus sent him home and tells him not to go into town or tell anyone. And once again, we see Jesus is not doing these miracles for publicity, because the publicity might generate. Instead, he seeks them to be quiet, perhaps again to keep the crowds from falling a little bit down. Mark chapter 8. In verse 22. Then he came to Bethsaida and brought a blind man to him, or they brought a blind man to him, and begged him to touch him. And so he took the blind man by the hand, and he led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands on him, he asked him if he saw anything. He looked up and said, "I see men like trees walking." He put his hands on his eyes again, made him look up. And he was restored and saw everyone clearly. And he sent him away to his house, saying, "Neither go into the town, nor tell anyone in the town." Any comments about that section? All right, we'll stop there.